All right, let's do this. How are you, what the fuckers, what the fuck buddies, what the fuck nicks, what the fucksters? What is happening? How are you doing? How are the kids? How's your mom doing? Everything all right over there? How's your finger? Did it heal right? Did you have to splint it? Did you have to splint your finger? Don't stick it in that thing next time. Seriously. How's that burn? Is that burn okay? What happened to your hair? Well, maybe you wait. You don't cut it yourself next time. I know it was just the bangs, but it's... I'm just being honest with you. But what fucking difference does it make? It's not like you're going out anyways, right? Do whatever you want with it. You know what? Why don't you go into the bathroom and cut your hair in a way that'll just make you laugh and laugh and laugh, and then just leave it that way for a while. And then the next time you do a Zoom with somebody, a family friend, they'll be like, is she okay? Is he okay? What's with the haircut? And you can just be like, what haircut? And it'll be so funny. You got to entertain yourself during these times because the creeping darkness is still among us. Good morning. Good afternoon. How's it going? You okay? You staying in shape? Enough with the comfort food, right? Enough with it. Enough with it. Okay? I'm tired of feeling slightly bloated, slightly filled up. I'm tired. The creeping darkness is still with us. Look, first of all, some of you were expecting William Zabka today, and Zabka had to cancel. Zabka is shooting another season of Cobra Kai, and as we know, or as I know, you think you can do something, you think you got an hour, and then the schedule changes and you don't. So we're looking to reschedule that, okay? It's going to happen. Today in his place, for those of you who are expecting William Zabka, well, don't be disappointed because we've got Rick Glassman. That's right, Rick Glassman. Yeah, Rick Glassman. Are you like, holy shit, Rick Glassman? Yup, Rick Glassman. He's a comedian who I had sort of a rocky start with. And he's got a podcast. It's called the Take Your Shoes Off podcast. And we met at the Comedy Store in a, you know, it was not a great first meeting, but I grew to like the kid. The kid annoyed himself right into my heart. And I did his podcast, and I was surprisingly goofy. Surprised everyone, myself included. And now he's on my show. He came through in a pinch. We're running tight these days. Week to week, man. We got a few in the can, but some people got to be dropped on certain days. When someone needs to be dropped on a certain day, you drop them on that day. So Rick is here, and we had a nice conversation. Nice Jewish guy, dirty, filthy Jewish kid with the autism. We get into it. Funny guy. You might know him from Undateable. He's on that show. He's going to be on another thing. And then he does other things here and there. Okay? What are we going to do with the creeping darkness? I can't take it. Is it just because I'm 57? Huh? Is it? Is it just the nature of the age I'm at that I see the creeping darkness? I'm meditating. Does this sound like a voice of someone who's meditating? I am. I'm yogaing. I'm doing the yogas. I do the yogas in the morning. I do 4 to 5 yogas, yoga flows, right? That's been helping. I'm working out, but it's just the walking around the house, the up and down. How am I so busy? How does the day get filled? Well, I'll tell you how. I'm running a fucking restaurant that serves me. Cooking my ass off. My cat Buster, he's the only cat left. The other two are ashes in boxes on a shelf. And Buster's very talkative. We're bonding. A lot of people are pressuring me to get another kitten, but I don't need any more anxiety. I can barely handle the dread of... That's the other weird thing. It's like so much of the dread of the ogre is gone, but then I'm back to regular dread. And this has been such a weird relief to only have very basic existential dread. Like, am I going to get sick and die? Am I going to get sick and get sick? Am I not going to get sick? Can I ever leave the house again? What is life? What do I want to do with the rest of it? Will I be able to go outside for the rest of my life? Will we be able to travel? Will we be able to run if necessary? Do I need a gun? And that's just the happy thoughts. So I focus on the cat and I hyper-focus on the cat. The cat's a little sneezy, a little sniffly. He does this. And then he stops. Now, there's no other symptoms, but my brain, it's sort of like, Does he have a tumor in his nose? Is there a tumor pressing on his sinus passages? Are his lungs collapsing? Could be allergies, I guess. And I Google cat allergies, and I Google cat cold, and I Google, then I'm into some other thing. Cat sinus infection. Does he have discharge? Does he have fluids coming out of his eyes? Is there black gunk in his nose? Is he lethargic? Is he eating? Is he not eating? No, he's a... And then it goes every once in a while. Not all the time. Meow, meow. Then he talks. But when I have all this time, all I do is focus on the cat. So needless to say, we've bonded very deeply. And the thing about my cat, it's like Buster's a real character. Like he has no balls. He's got courage. I'm not saying metaphorically. He literally has no balls. But this cat, you know, God bless him. He's still got a lot of oomph, got a lot of hech. You know what I mean? And that's not even a word. That's just a Yiddish sound. My cat's full of the ugh, the yicha, the guchem. He's full of the mch, the gech. Yeah. Not even words. The chutz. Yeah. My cat is still fucking pillows. My cat will fuck the shit out of a pillow. Got no balls, but he's still got the gumption. There's this new, a nice new blanket, cashmere blanket that I got in a box of swag. And Buster's taken to it, and he'll fuck that blanket, and he'll look right in my face while he's doing it. I'll look at him, and I'm like, what's up? And he's like, what do you mean, what's up? Don't look at me. I'm fucking a blanket. I'm like, well, I'm going to look at you. He's like, don't you fucking look at me. He's like a little Dennis Hopper in Blue Velvet. He's got a small oxygen mask that he handles with his paw. Don't fucking look at me. That's how he says it. That's translating. He's full of the, ugh, that cat. But yeah, so that's where Buster's at. He's got some sort of sneezy business, and he's busy fucking pillows and blankets and talking to me, and he wakes me up 2 or 3 times a night to wake me up, apparently. So he's doing okay. Okay? Who wouldn't be doing okay? Fucking blankets. Hey, Rick Glassman is here. And as I said earlier, I've taken a liking to him. He's difficult, but he's charming. He's a comedian. He's got the podcast, Take Your Shoes Off. And you can hear that every Monday if you want. Take Your Shoes Off. It's every Monday where you get podcasts. We're going to talk about it. We're going to talk about the goblins. There's going to be talk about goblin cock. Not goblin cock, but goblin cock. Hey, look, I'm sorry if it's filthy. All right? I'm just sitting here fucking a pillow. This is me talking to Rick Glassman.
Yeah, I got a little cocky by taking my jacket off.
Well, I left the windows open out of respect for your fear. And I guess my own. I mean,
it's a mutual fear, no?
Yeah, it is, but I mean, I don't... Who the fuck knows?
You haven't had somebody in here in a while. So when you're looking at your computer monitor?
I bring in the laptop because this does nothing. I can't seem to run the GarageBand and the image without it. It just takes too much something. I don't fucking know. You seem to know more about it than me.
Yeah, it's always, yeah.
But I mean, maybe. You do, like, it seems like on your show, you do a lot of video work, a lot of editing, a lot of cartoons.
Yeah.
Poops, farts, elves.
Uh-huh. You know, goblins.
Yeah, goblins. But, you know, you got to know something to do that, right?
Yeah. I added live-action animation and a lot of edits because, you know, you need to have something.
But do you do that? Do you do the animation yourself?
No.
You hire that out?
Yeah, well, I always wanted to do animation because I just had fun ideas for bits.
Yeah.
I did a fake animation in an episode, and a guy in England named Tom,
yeah,
he made the animation for me.
Oh, so you've got fans.
I don't know if he's a fan or a partner at this point, because literally every episode
Do you pay him?
I do pay him.
Well, he's working for you on some level.
Yeah.
But he did it out of the goodness of his heart because he enjoyed your comedy so much.
He's still, the rate he's giving me, he must still enjoy it.
Right.
Because I wouldn't be able to afford what he's doing otherwise.
People want to be part of it. So you just, you send the file to him and he just does it?
Yeah. So most of the bits are planned out while we're doing the thing, you know, like when you say poops and pisses and shits,
farts.
I would then send him and say, have the goblin be pooping on Mark and pissing on his
right,
lap or something.
Right.
And in a smart way, though.
Yeah. Always smart.
And
always highbrow pooping and pissing.
HBPs.
Yeah, sure.
So I tell him how I want it, and depending on where it is in the episode, how gratuitous it could be.
Yeah.
And then sometimes I find bits after the fact.
Yeah.
And I send it to him. And it's, you know, removing the fact that it's a lot of, like, fake penises and boobs and immature comedy intentionally.
Right.
It's a serious conversation that I have with him, and it's...
It's a serious conversation about
how many
poops,
veins,
farts,
how many poops. Should many, it be poop or should it be
how
you
many
know,
veins
snot?
on the cock?
Yeah,
I didn't realize you were dealing with cocks. There's cocks.
There's cocks.
Really?
Yes, cocks.
Is it your cock generally?
No,
it's just a cock.
I do cocks and
with
I,
cocks with the goblins. Goblin cocks.
Sometimes goblin cocks. There is a monster goblin cock.
That acts on its own without being connected to a goblin.
Correct. It walks on its balls.
It's a free range cock.
Yes.
Doesn't need to be part of anybody else.
And, you know, my introduction to this with you at the beginning is cocks and poops and pussies and balls. And though that is
part. We didn't talk pussy.
We didn't talk.
We mentioned.
Last episode, my guest, Sona Yusufzian, said, get out of here.
Right.
Is an expression. So I snapped and I disappeared and I made a production out of it.
Yeah.
She snapped me back, and we showed where I was, and I was inside of a big vagina.
So you had the guy in England do the big vagina illustration?
Yeah, and then we give notes, you know, could we make the walls move? Could we have some goblin sperm going through?
From the big cock?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, I did your show because you were... Did you annoy me into it? I can't remember. How many times did you... Was it a pestering situation?
No, I did it. I it was a slow play. It was,
yeah.
I asked you once.
Oh, you asked me once.
Yeah, I asked you once.
Right, and then you said, what about it?
Well, you shit on me, and then I gave it a year, and I said, hey, will you come do my podcast?
Wait. You asked me to do the podcast, I shit on you, and then you wait a year?
No. You shit on me first.
No, I know. We can do the backstory, because I don't think people know, you know, how we know each other.
How do you
explain it? Because this is my show and I'm interviewing you, so I'd like to hear your angle. I mean, we might have done this on your podcast, but I think we don't share a lot of listeners.
Right.
So how did you experience our first interaction?
Could I and then
what?
Could I ask you a question first?
You have to go to the bathroom?
No.
Okay.
This is both me wanting to, me on your podcast, speaking to an audience, but also you, an interviewer.
Right.
I'm feeling like, not defensive, but I'm feeling like I have sold a very niche, ironic brand of comedy as my introduction as this immature, which is fine, because it is definitely part of me.
It's all going to work out. Don't worry, we got time.
You know,
we're gonna ease into it, buddy.
Until you said that, I didn't even realize I was worried about. Yeah, that's what's happening. There's a worry. I think I'm trying to understand something.
We
I'm just worried.
We all know that you're a highly sophisticated, very deep, multi-dimensional Jewish man.
Here's where I would animate just big goblin dicks walking between us.
So why is that then? Why do you temper it like that? Why can't
dynamics?
Is it dynamics?
Yeah, it really is.
Are you afraid to be sincere?
No, I seek it.
Are you afraid that people are not going to watch it if you don't counter the sincerity with goblin dicks and being in a vagina?
If there was a fear, and I don't know if fear is the right word, but let's say it is.
Okay.
It's less about people won't watch it and more about if they do, will they... I'm insecure about making stuff that isn't special.
Uh-huh.
And
because you're special?
I want to think so. Yeah, I want to think so.
I think you do want to think you are special.
Uh huh. I'm not. That's not a burn at all. It's you're just validating the truth, which is, you know, we all can be at times, and you just try to find your niche, so you are more often than not.
So would you call it is it a branding quest that you're looking for, or authenticity? Do you think that if you were true to yourself? In the most honest way that you would be special, or is that not even enough?
Yeah, I think that if I'm true to myself, I am special, and the penises are true to me.
The goblin penises.
What they stand for, being able to cut serious moments with comedy and be able to have sincerity and honest moments, it goes both ways.
Sure.
And by just having that as a device, it ended up becoming that, a device where I now seek times to use it. But it is...
But you get excited. Like, sometimes you're like, I probably shouldn't use it, but I need some dicks here.
I've never thought I shouldn't use it and didn't use it unless it was a budget issue.
Uh-huh. But, I mean, do you think... I'm asking to you, are there any gratuitous goblin cocks in any of the work?
Yes. but you know, I'm not saying it's the richest of context, but there's always a reason for it.
Sure. That and that, you know.
Well, like right now, if we had already set this up and this is my podcast, I'm having a goblin cock come in, but he's now wearing a tuxedo and it's not gratuitous.
Right.
And it's you get to build this world like a Quahog or a South Park.
Right. Around the interview. The person you're talking to has no idea that they may be fucked in the ear by a goblin.
That's where sometimes it gets tricky.
Really? Have you had pushback?
Yeah. Yeah, it's less about what the animation is and more about the fact that I'm live editing and I'm asking people to do stuff.
All right, so you're taking them out of context in a way.
I'm taking them out of context. I'm willing to explain it to them, but right. I prefer if they just trust where it's going to go.
And I thought ours went really smooth. Like I played along and it was almost like we were a comedy team.
Are you being serious? Because I do feel that way.
No, I feel that way.
Yeah, there's something really pretty about having somebody come over, because you and I didn't know each other well at all.
No. I was skeptical of everything about you.
Yeah, and I feared your skepticism.
Yeah.
I wanted you there and also questioned why you came.
Yeah, well, I mean, because you were... Well, what do you mean? You asked me and you seemed to want me to come. I don't know why I came. Because you're charming.
Casual gratuitous right
there.
No,
you're charming. Casual gratuitous? Oh, you would put one in there?
Yeah, it was a... Listen, we got to move past. That was just a casual cum joke.
Oh, I see. Right, yeah. Got it. But that would have been animated?
No, at this point...
Do you have cumming goblin cocks?
There has been... Yeah, I don't show the cum.
Oh, is that where you draw the line?
It's where Tom doesn't draw the line. Please, let's move past this, because it's...
No, I think people need to know... No, I think that this will people be like, what is this show? We haven't even said the name of it. This is a great build.
Uh-huh.
What's it called?
It's called Take Your Shoes Off.
And that's a real thing because you're like a fucking weirdo and you won't let people in your house without... I guess that's not that weird.
Yeah, I would say that though...
Most people.
I subscribe to being weird. I don't think the taking your shoes off is that. I think it's weird to track shit, piss, and cum through your carpet. Cigarette butts.
My cat walks around on my food counter. Where do you stand with that?
That's what I grew up with cats.
So you don't have a problem with it?
I've accepted that's how people live their life. When I go home, that's how it is.
There are cats on the food counter?
Yeah. I just don't use the food counter the same way I do at my house.
Which is what, you lick it off the counter? You eat right off the counter?
No, I like to make big portions. And I'll leave stuff out on the counter and I'll go back to it during the day.
Like you have a buffet going at your house most of the day?
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. I like to make things that have different sauces and different toppings. Yeah, I never thought of it that way, but it's a buffet, an eaten buffet. And a cat is just like having a roommate. I just don't want to leave stuff out. I don't have a roommate.
My cat wouldn't eat anything. He wouldn't eat anything I left out on the counter. He'll lick a piece of fish occasionally, but he doesn't eat.
What's the difference between eating and licking?
Well, I guess that's true. I'm more concerned about the cat than I am with me. I mean, you're going to cook it. Well, that's not true actually.
Yeah.
There's some bad shit in cat mouths.
Yeah.
My cat bit me, and I had a catch in it of an infection before it possibly killed me.
Are you okay?
Yeah, but I had to take antibiotics. He bit me because he got stuck in the blind cord, and instead of just cutting it, I tried to untangle him, and he was panicking, so he bit me for real, and I washed it and everything. But cat bites, I don't know if you know, they have some serious fucking germs in them. And you can get this infection that goes through all of your skin.
I didn't know.
And it started to happen. I was on IG Live, and people were like, you should get that looked at. It was red. And I went to my doctor, and she was like, you got this in time. This could have been bad. Like, my cat could have fucking killed me, compromised my life.
Well, that's less a counter problem and more a blinds problem, I guess.
That is a blinds problem, but next time I'll just cut the cord.
Yeah, I was just going to ask, do you feel that that's kind of a microcosm of your personality, where instead of just taking the easy route, you want to untangle everything and get your hands dirty?
No, I don't think that. I think that's an interesting metaphor that you tried to make.
Thank you. But we'll be right back after a word
from
our sponsor.
Wait, this is mine. This is my show. No, we're doing...
Can we edit it in here?
Edit what in?
My dad's rug store?
No!
And we're back. That's Marshall Rug Gallery in Cleveland, Ohio.
Did you slip? Did you think you were on your show?
No, I just felt good with you, and I figured
all right, maybe
we could plug my dad's rug store.
Maybe we'll throw it in there. We'll Have you brought him customers?
He sold a few rugs. I know at least a few rugs, but not enough to. I do commercials for him in every episode.
You're a Cleveland Jew?
Yeah.
So wait, where were we? Oh no, that is not a microcosm. My it was impulsive for me to untangle him. I didn't think to cut it. Like, he was panicking, and in that moment, my brain was like, it's because he's tangled, untangle. It didn't go the next step to, like, he's going to bite you and possibly infect your hand. Perhaps let him fucking squirm for a minute more and go find a scissor to cut the cord.
Well, that's what I'm saying.
Yeah, but that I don't think that means that it's a general disposition of mine to untangle. I'd rather not untangle.
Well, why are we doing this right now, then?
Why are we untangling you?
This.
What do you mean?
I feel like we're untangling. I'm an untangler.
You're an untangler.
I like an untangle.
I can't. I lose patience with it. Everything gets tangled. And if I were an untangler, it's almost like a hobby. It's like I used to do a bit about it, I think, about how there are so many cords in our lives. Cords, mm-hmm. Literal cords that are constantly getting tangled up and fucked up. So is like constantly untangling cords the same as doing like Sudoku? Like, am I getting equal amount of like mental dexterity from the act of untangling the cords in my life as I would if I were playing a game with boxes that I don't understand?
Well, I think the difference is Sudoku always comes to you intentionally tangled, where
so the spontaneity of it diminishes the mental agility exercise of untangling.
Well, there's the mental agility of it, which I'm disregarding. I'm just talking about having a clean life.
Right.
When you untangle something, it's now life. Untangled. And right. And also, when you untangle something, you get better at untangling.
Kind of.
So it's not like every day you wake up and you have to clean the same mess over and over again.
No, but there's always knots.
And that brings us to my next point.
Yeah. You want to do another rug ad? So
I'd rather nuts.
So Take Your Shoes Off is with Rick Glassman.
Uh-huh.
I've seen bits and pieces that you put up on Instagram of your family. And it seems that you grew up with some fairly, not run-of-the-mill, but not unusual to me, middle-class Jewish maniacs. Is that right?
Yeah, I mean, they weren't not unusual to me either.
No, but I mean, as a Jew who's dealt with Jews mm-hmm. of a certain ilk,
yeah,
your family seems to fit some of that. They strike me as more kind of like pre-retirement Florida Jews, which is interesting.
PRFJs?
Yeah.
I don't have Florida retirement Jews in my family, so I know the cliche. I don't know what those are.
Well, I just mean it seems like they have a good time. They enjoy sports. There's a lot of them around.
Yeah. It feels like there's a lot of them. Right now in Cleveland, there's four of them.
Four?
Mom, dad, grandma, and uncle. The rest are out in L.A.
You got Glassman Jews out here?
Yeah.
Who?
I got my aunt. I got my brother. I have three cousins.
Your aunt's out here?
My dad's sister moved out here before I did.
To do what?
Get out of there, I guess. She and my Uncle Paul, who passed away a couple years ago, they're in the business, and
they're in show business?
My uncle is a writer. He passed away about 2 years ago coming up.
Sorry, buddy.
Thank you.
How young?
Young. Late 60s.
Oh, it's terrible.
He and his writing partner, Danny Bilson, just did the Five Bloods with
Glassman
Spike Lee.
And Bilson?
No, he's DeMeo.
DeMeo.
Paul DeMeo. DeMeo and Bilson.
Wrote
Five Bloods and a lot of stuff. The Rocketeer, a lot of cool stuff. But
The Rocketeer, I kind of remember that.
Yeah.
It was a kid's movie, right? Was Dennis Quaid in that? Was it about a...
The Rocketeer is like a 50s toy, Iron
right?
Man.
Oh, right. Oh, so it was actually a superhero movie? It wasn't based like on a kid's dream or something?
I don't know the origins. It was an old comic book.
I know that, but I thought that the movie was about a kid who liked The Rocketeer or something.
No, it's about a guy who becomes The Rocketeer.
Oh.
Yeah.
Who was it?
I don't remember the actor's name. No, it wasn't.
It wasn't?
No.
Okay.
But he became The Rocketeer and boy, his arm's tired.
His arms are tired. Yeah. Yeah. I'm sorry I stepped on that because it probably would have got a huge laugh.
Cut to the people listening just...
So how many... You got one brother?
Yeah.
That's
one brother.
Older?
Older. He's out here.
You're a younger brother.
I'm a younger brother, yeah.
Does that explain a lot about who you are?
Yeah, probably.
Really?
That's one thing I haven't really untangled.
You haven't?
Some things feel too cliche to look into.
Really? Like what? Being a Jew? Having neurotic...
I don't know. The way you just said that felt anti-Semitic. Being a Jew. You had your coffee ready for a sip take after, Joe.
What were you listening to when you drove? It wasn't Barry Manilow, was it?
Yeah. Mm. Good ear.
Why? Why would you do that?
I have a mix on my phone that is just, I work out or I try to, whenever I'm trying
none
to-
None of what you're saying right now is explaining Barry Manilow yet.
Oh, I misunderstood the question. I thought you asked if I work out. Anything I do that I listen to music to get prepared for, I listen to soft music. Mm-hmm. I work out to soft music. I go to sleep to soft music. I come over here to soft music.
Uh-huh.
And boy, are my arms tired.
There. So you got it out that time.
The guy who was coughing before goes, that's actually pretty
good. Yeah, it's pretty good. Doesn't make sense this time.
Yeah.
Yeah. So Barry Manilow, something you grew up with?
No, just soft music, man.
Stop it, man. How do you know about Barry Manilow? What are you, 12? How old are you?
Thank you.
I'm 34?
36.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh, it's getting up there.
Yeah. Mm. Whenever I hear something that is soft, when I hear something that's soft, I Shazam it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Really? So what else is in your mix?
We animate now just this flaccid dick that I'm Shazamming. And I know in the moment, it's not going to be worth it. It's going to cost me a little extra money. And
people to make the dick?
Yeah.
Yeah. We're not even doing video, which is interesting that you're still thinking dicks.
How do you blend when you're talking to somebody, the difference between an interview and a conversation? I mean, I know the differences when you're, I just listened to, by the way, and if we don't talk about it here, I want to talk to you about it either off a podcast
or
on mine.
You did some prep or?
I don't know if it was prep. I just happened to listen to your Larry King interview.
Yeah.
I didn't know you very well. Maybe we should talk about how we met, but I didn't know you very well. I knew you as
when?
A personality.
When I came to your
before
house?
You came to my house.
Oh,
yeah.
Right. Yeah.
And then after you came over, and I'm feeling my eyes getting water even talking about it, I liked you in that hour and a half that we spent. Expectations weren't met, and I didn't realize the expectations I had of you, which was, you know, just a grouchy guy, which exists, you know. I guess it's part of the Jewish cliche.
Yeah.
But the amount that you played with me and did the snaps and the edits, and we never talked about it before, really.
No.
And then I just liked you so much. And I listened to your podcast since differently, which is... I mean, I guess it makes sense, but just like as a person, as a human, as opposed to just like this two-dimensional thing that I don't quite know yet.
Right.
And listening to, and you know, it was older. It was 2013, right?
Yeah.
But listening to you going to his door and just, it's a game over at this point.
Right.
And then you went through it, and then you get, whether it's true or not, you were able to continue the conversation, then he seemed to forget about it for a minute,
yeah.
Is really inspiring.
Yeah.
Because it doesn't, I don't leave that discomfort that quickly. And what made you record at the door before?
Well, I used to do, when I did those ones externally, when I would be traveling, there was sort of a precedent set. Like I would sometimes do the intros in the car driving, like to the Robin Williams episode. There were actually a couple of early episodes that we did in the car. Like I interviewed Maria Bamford driving. Mm. So it wasn't that unusual at that time for me to make the intro happen in real time. I never knew if we'd use it or not, but it turned out to be kind of interesting. But I know what you're saying. And I think that I still want to connect. I mean, there've only been a couple of times where I've remained defensive. Like what could have happened is he said, you know, he was being a dick, and then I would have just sort of surrendered to that. So once like anything else, when that happens, is once if the conversation starts to unfold, then it goes away. You know, but if he was going to be like, what? No.
Right.
Yes. I don't know.
Yeah.
Good. Then it would have been a problem. But somehow I charmed him enough. I've relaxed him enough, and he did the thing. I think people seem to like that.
It was a great interview.
So, Cleveland, how Jewy were you in Cleveland?
I didn't know how Jewy I was until I went to college. Because
But, like, you grew up, like, you're 36. How old is your brother?
About to be 39.
So you have the exact same distance between you two as me and my brother. Maybe that has something to do with
you're
why
older?
We get along. Yeah. My brother's 2.5 years younger than me.
Interesting, because my brother and I guess we get along fine now, but we didn't get along.
Really?
No.
Why is he? What's the primary difference? Is it tastes?
I'm feeling myself do something that I'm not. I don't want to be, but I'm. I don't know.
Don't be mean.
No. I don't know how much I feel comfortable
talking about that.
Oh, not because it's secretive, but because it's a longer conversation, and I don't want to paint anybody in a picture that's negative, because I remember things the way I remember them, but I also, looking back, understand my perspective as a kid isn't necessarily taking into consideration of his perspective. But I could just, in a simple way, I could just tell you from my feelings as a kid, I'm definitely being defensive here.
That's all right.
It's a big brother, little brother thing, but I was scared a lot and bullied. And
by him?
You know, the fear comes from part of that, but I had some very serious OCD as a kid.
Yeah.
Not just in my rituals, but also in the things that felt still today logical, of just keeping things a certain way. And
sure.
And share, you know, basically he was a cat on my countertops. And my whole life was a countertop.
He was chaos.
He was chaos. And
were cleanup.
Yeah. I took on that role, I guess. He's a brilliant, he truly is, you know, I know people say that about their family, but maybe I have a bias. I think he's the smartest person I've ever met.
Oh yeah? Was he in the business?
No, he has restaurants
in
kind
Cleveland?
Of not right now. No, here. And he is have you ever been to the Greyhound?
Oh yeah, over in Highland Park?
It's Highland Park in Glendale. And
yeah, I remember when they opened that. That's your guy?
That's my
your
brother. Yeah.
Pizza.
Yeah, they do pizza, burgers.
Right, burgers.
Cornbread.
It's just, I remember cornbread.
My father was in the restaurant business growing up, and
no kidding. I like cornbread.
This is the best cornbread. It's my I want to get brag. My dad used to do rib cook-offs and cornbread, and Michael Jordan and Isaiah Thomas and Lambeer, they all came and loved his cornbread.
Was your dad a well-known pit master?
What's a pit master? Oh, no. Pit master is like a barbecue pit,
yeah.
Right? Were there pit masters back in the...
I mean, I think that's just a name for a guy that uses a barbecue like I have. Like a smoker. Did he have a smoker?
Yeah. Yeah, right. It was a sports bar and grill. It was a big barbecue.
He had a smoker?
Joint.
Like so he had a real barbecue joint. So
Ribs
and cornbread. Yeah. So I think, you know, theoretically, you could be a pit master if you're legit doing ribs.
Yeah, I'll tell you, right now, he's more than a pit master.
Mm.
We'll be right back with a word from our sponsor. And then we'll put in Marshall Rugg commercial here.
Maybe.
Yeah.
Marshall Rugg's in Cleveland?
Yeah.
If you're looking for just the right flooring, you need choices. At Marshall Carpet One, you'll find thousands of choices, including carpet, hardwood, rugs, and luxury vinyl. So make the right choice and visit Marshall Carpet One and Rug Gallery. And we promise, with more than 50 years as a family-owned business, we've got you covered.
My brother's younger, but he was a jock and I wasn't. And his whole life was about tennis. Like, literally, his entire childhood was about tennis. And him and I were so different in behavior. But now, we're like so alike, it's painful.
Why would... Painful, that's just as a figure of speech, you said.
Well,
that, right?
Just like... Well, no, I mean, it's like if you can feel each other that deeply, you know, like, I know when he's going through something. Like, I can hear it. Like, that's the weird thing about growing up in a family without boundaries, is that you kind of get a sense pretty quickly.
That's a great way of explaining growing up in a middle-ish, I think I'm more upper middle, I don't want to lie to you, class Jewish family. It's a lack of boundaries.
Yeah,
sorry to cut you off, by the way.
No,
I think it's great.
It's your show. You think the lack of boundaries is great?
I think growing up in a place, I think it's a fine line. I would equate it to getting antibodies.
Interesting. Okay, I'll talk you through that. But it seemed like your parents are loud.
My mom is loud, but my mom is loud in a way where it works, because she's so kind, to where it's...
Loud, kind?
I've gotten better over the years.
Yeah.
I came into some pretty big self-awareness almost 4 years ago now. But my loudness was very attention-seeking and aggressive without knowing it. And my mom's loud is just wanting to help people, and maybe they need to hear me.
Yeah.
So the boundary issue was my mom was loud, but everyone loved her, including
right.
everyone in the family. And
your dad?
My dad is, you know, he sold cornbread and tells jokes under his breath.
All right, but what's his boundarylessness look like?
The boundaryless is more, I guess it's my mom.
So she, you know, everyone had to react to her.
You know, I'm figuring this out with you. So could I change and add to my answer?
Yeah.
Let me collect myself. We'll be right back.
That's against the rules. Yeah, I'll bend the rules this time.
Thank you.
You can change and add to your answer now.
I'm trying to define something when I really only could know it through my eyes from then. So just trying to think of that is my brother would be, I am the way I am and uh-huh. things need to be a certain way and clean. And
yeah.
my brother would be, he played sports and outside in the mud, ironically yeah. enough, getting some antibodies. And right. he would find a Mike and Ike in the dirt and eat it to get a laugh.
Right.
And he would come in and he'd have some dirt under the fingernails. He's a boy. He plays. You get dirty.
Yeah, sure. Eat Mike and Ike's out of the dirt. Sure. Or maybe a Razzle or a Skittle. But it was a Mike and Ike.
It was a Mike and Ike. Okay. It was one of the two, at least.
Sure.
And we would have M&Ms on the counter as like decorative, but people, you know, you eat M&Ms. And my brother
in
liked the way. Yes.
Yeah.
My brother would like the way M&Ms feel going yeah. between his fingers.
Sure.
Because, listen.
Feels good.
Yeah, it's like a waterfall.
Sure, something.
But they're not his waterfalls.
Well.
So my brother's got dirt in his fingers. He's touching all the M&Ms. He's eating out of the cereal. He's eating on the chips.
Out of the cereal, too?
Yeah, cereal boxes.
And digging for the prize, I bet.
I guess.
Okay.
I wasn't
all
one
right.
who needed the prize.
Yeah,
I'm sorry if that was a joke you were making.
No one needs the prize, but you want to get it out.
I want to have cereal that doesn't have dirt in it. So I'm now sitting on the couch feeling like I'm forced to keep inventory and watch. And I started to only eat the cereals that my brother didn't like.
Right.
And I felt like I didn't have control over the things I wanted because I was limited. While I was building this resentment of watching my brother, and I don't want to say bad stuff. He's a kid. He's a little boy.
No, it's
just
brother stuff. It's fine.
We share a bathroom.
Yeah.
Pisses on the towels.
Sure. He pissed on the towels?
The cat pissed on the towels if he left the towel down.
Oh, the cat pissed on the towels.
But I got
your brother probably just pissed on the rim of the toilet, mostly.
If he even hit the toilet. But I got to tell you something. He's changed. You got to check out the Greyhound. It really is delicious and clean. Yeah, I don't know why I'm uncomfortable about this. It feels like I'm talking. I am. I'm literally talking about someone.
But I like the idea of the idea that you brought up about growing up in a boundaryless home gives you antibodies to what?
I'll tell you what.
I mean, I like the idea, and I'm just wondering if we can flesh it out a little.
Yeah. So much like germs, you could get too much and get sick of it. You don't want to have no boundaries because then you don't. Mm. You need to learn them.
Yeah.
And I think that the only reason any success I have in my life is because of the combination of knowing that I have to stop somewhere, but being liquid with other people's boundaries.
Huh. Right.
You know, when you come over,
yeah.
in a similar way you said, if Larry King acted a certain way, you would then have to mirror that. But at the same time, it is your interview and you're in control. And if you were to come over and I snap for you putting on a fake mustache and you're not into it, and I don't recognize your boundary,
right?
It's game over. But if I assume your boundary based on how I've been conditioned people's boundaries are, I wouldn't be able to push it that far. So by being comfortable in testing boundaries and playing with boundaries and experimenting with them, you run the risk of stepping over them at times.
Sure.
But you also learn how to not stay so tight into what you think comfortable is.
Right.
And part of this awareness that I've come into that I'm super grateful for is making people uncomfortable, making myself uncomfortable. It's an operational cost of doing what we do. But it's not about making people uncomfortable that is the problem, in my opinion. It's about recognizing it fast enough.
And deciding why you're doing it.
Yeah.
I mean, so you're talking about stand-up in terms of what we do, but I think
I mean that very interpersonally.
Okay. But also stand-up.
Yes.
Like, I'm tracking what you're saying specifically to stand-up, because stand-up is something... Because I often try to figure out why exactly I chose that. My childhood, really what I was trying to overcome and what terrified me more than anything was being embarrassed. I didn't want to be embarrassed. And my mother used to embarrass me. I found my parents embarrassing. And I always felt embarrassed. And I was terrified of being embarrassed. So somehow, and neither one of them had boundaries. But it was different. It wasn't so much yelling as much as it was emotional indecisiveness.
Mm-hmm.
So it's kind of floaty. You know what I mean? No discipline, no real principles, not much guidance. Everybody was just sort of, it was amoebic, the family unit.
So you didn't know where you were at any given moment emotionally?
Self-wise.
Right.
Yeah. So, but there's something about the way you're talking about this immunity to figuring out, because if you have no boundaries or you grow up in a fairly boundaryless place, that means you probably get hurt often early on, right? Because of the sensitivity of that. And then all of a sudden you get reactive. So either you're going to be defensive or hostile or preemptive to be defensive, right? But conversely, it does enable you to absorb people in a different and more all-immersive way. And once you get the hang of that, you can sort of dictate the intimacy of the situation quicker than most people, and also have it be relatively inappropriate quicker than most people. And then you have to navigate that.
Yeah. So being,
does that make sense?
Yeah. Being inappropriate, making somebody uncomfortable, not being connected with somebody, you know, there's only so much we control. And I really believe it's more than most people think. And
in terms of interpersonal relationship.
Yeah. And it really comes down.
You can do it until the other person gets tired of it. That could take years.
Well, I guess if they get tired of it. But people's feelings are heavily based on subconscious expectations, or maybe conscious, but at the least expectations.
Yeah.
Mitigating expectations is the key to understanding somebody's boundaries. Because a true boundary isn't about expectation. It's about where they feel safe and comfortable.
Right.
So sometimes they could be uncomfortable because an expectation is not being met.
Right.
I got a diagnosis 4 years ago that I had ASD level 1, which is it's commonly known as Asperger syndrome.
Yeah.
And
which is a funny word.
Yeah.
Asperger.
Animate a dick on an ass eating a burger.
Did you do that?
No.
Ah. No. Interesting.
But if this were my podcast.
You just thought of that now?
No, I've been sitting on it. after that diagnosis, I've learned a lot about, I don't know how much time we have, if it's worth getting into, but I went to a lot of special classes, special schools, kicked
4
out.
4 years ago?
In grade school and high school.
Oh, so before you knew you were Asperger's.
I was diagnosed with a whole bunch of different things
what?
As a kid. The ADD, the ADHD, the
OCD,
OCD, learning disability, which isn't a specific diagnosis.
How did that manifest itself? Because you must
which
have
one?
Been any of them. Like, well, what was the symptoms of why were you seen as a problem? What weren't you doing or what were you doing?
Well, hyperactive, asking a lot of questions, asking questions to where teachers thought I was making fun.
Wow.
Not understanding. So
your earnestness was mistaken for sarcasm?
And I developed a sarcasm in a way to try and control how people see me.
Yeah.
If you're going to think that I'm not, you know, let me at least try and make it funny. Let me find new ways of asking questions or trying to explain myself until things work. I never picked up on social cues. I didn't know that I wasn't picking up on them.
Asperger is different than autism, right?
Clinically, they've Asperger's is no longer a definition anymore. It's autism level 1.
Okay.
So ASD level 1, 2, and 3. So Asperger's is level 1.
What's level 2?
More challenges.
Are you hoping to get there?
No.
Okay.
No. Can I try to untangle something?
Yeah.
What's the intention behind the joke of wanting to get there?
Oh. Because it's like when you think of levels.
Oh, so like 2 is better than...
Right.
Gotcha. It wasn't like then you'll have like a bigger niche to explore.
No. No, that was where you went with your insecurity.
Yeah.
Mine was a number joke. You went deeper.
That's why, it wasn't insecurity. I've talked about it on my podcast, maybe 5 of them. I do get insecure talking about it because of people's understanding or lack of what autism is. And I find myself either becoming a spokesperson for something that I can't be,
yeah,
or defending a diagnosis that has changed my life for the better because people think it is something that it's not necessarily.
Well, I think like what's interesting to me is that you've learned how to utilize and understand your compulsive and also your earnest curiosity, which I think as a symptom, I imagine, of the autism, would be overwhelming to some people, but you understand it enough to be charming in it and also see the humor in it. You have enough self-awareness around it that you don't feel uncomfortable with it, and you can make it funny even.
Yeah, yeah. It's not only do I not feel uncomfortable with it, when I got the diagnosis, it validated so many things of
You're
my
like,
past.
Oh my God! If I had known that, I wouldn't have done that.
More so, this is why that, and it's not my fault, and I, or I could understand how to improve upon it.
I've got to go apologize to some teachers.
And ask people who should apologize to me to come on my podcast. but I bring that up because one of the things I learned was how much, and any neurotypical person I'm sure could relate to this, we think something, so we assume the other person thinks it. You are sharing the same point. If I'm cold, you're cold. If I'm feeling this isn't going well, you are. And
that's not true, though.
Of course it's not true. But I'm saying that mindset of not recognizing that there's other perspectives. A common symptom of it is of autism is challenging to adapt to certain situations and an inability or difficulty to recognize that people think differently than you. It's why it's why they get frustrated so often, or why they seem to lack empathy, because
autistic people.
Yeah.
Okay.
One of the things that I've been, I guess maybe the biggest thing I've been focusing on, and where this podcast has been such a blessing for me, is being able to ask people, I mean, in a small way, asking you what was the intention behind that joke.
Right.
I would always ask questions like that, but it could seem aggressive. If I were to say, what's your point? Yeah. What do you mean? I was always trying to understand. So when I found these things out, and then I was single and I was dating, I was able to make jokes, but they were very... inspired. I smoke weed, and I like to smoke pot when you're on a date, especially if it's somebody who smokes.
Right.
And to be able to say to somebody preemptively,
right,
I get a little goofy, you
right.
know,
and
I sometimes I don't know when I go a little far.
Yeah.
So I'd like to ask of you, if you're ever feeling like this is a little bit too much and you don't know how to handle it, give me the benefit of the doubt and just like nudge me.
When did you decide that comedy was somehow the answer for you?
So I was telling you earlier, I didn't know that I didn't pick up on facial cues, and I didn't recognize people's hints when they would say, not today, Rick, I'm busy to friends. I would just think, oh, he can't today. He's busy for 3 years. Right.
Right.
But something I always did understand was a laugh. I knew a laugh was comfortable because not only is it nice to get a laugh for the obvious reasons, it was one of the few times where I felt confident in being on the same page with somebody. It wasn't just with me making them laugh. If we were laughing together.
Like, what did Harry Shearer say to me? Like, the great thing, the reason people do comedy is you can control why people are laughing at you.
Mm-hmm. I like that.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and on a more specific level, you could control how people feel about you for a minute. Because even somebody who doesn't like
you... Maybe you can control it for like 10, 15 seconds, and then you got to keep going.
Yeah, but the dopamine lasts longer than the laugh.
Sure. And then,
put that on
and
a
then
shirt.
Then the door is open.
Yeah.
Got it.
And then that's why you keep doing it and
you
seek it. And
that's right.
It's a vicious cycle.
And then eventually people go like, do you always have to be funny? And then all of a sudden you're in a different conversation, aren't you?
Yeah. Do you always have to be on is the one I get.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I was shut down. I was trampled by a couple of girlfriends way back with the sort of, because like when you're a comic, it's your profession. So there's sort of like that weird black beltism to it. Like, you know, I'm black belt at getting laughs, but I can't use it in public. I can only do it on stage professionally. But I don't think it was funny, but I've had girlfriends early on who were like, why do you have to talk so much when we're out with poise? Why do you have to domineer the conversation? It struck me.
What have you figured out since then? Why do you have to?
I don't. I stopped a long time ago. Yep. I mean, I think the reason it stuck with me, it was correct. And it really wasn't my nature. It was overcompensating.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's annoying when people do that.
Be careful of letting other people's definition of your identity distinguish between the difference of overcompensating and just being and compensating. Because she's not wrong, but she might be the wrong person.
It's a long time ago.
I'll speak for me.
I appreciate the advice. I do.
Well, when, you know, I have to find the difference. When somebody thinks I'm being something that they don't like, they're not wrong, but it doesn't mean I don't like it. And
that doesn't mean that it's not me or it's not you.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's like it could be as simple as like, well, you must not like me.
Right.
And that's okay.
Yeah.
Now get the fuck out of my house.
But how, what is the
that was a little aggressive. I apologize.
No, it's okay, because it's hypothetical.
Made up person, yeah.
But how, it's finding that difference. It's knowing when to untangle of, this person doesn't like this part of me, but this is who I am. And do I like this, who I am?
And also, like, is she right about what I'm doing right now, or is this part of me?
Right.
Because, like, sometimes when you're with somebody, you're doing something that isn't innately you because you're trying to accommodate them or charm them or impress them.
I get the most uncomfortable when I find myself doing that.
Yeah.
That's a big challenge of podcasting. Sometimes that happens, and you, at least for me.
Yeah.
I'm proud to say, for better and for worse, I am who I am most of the time. But sometimes I find myself in a situation where I'm trying, either trying for the person, trying for the audience, trying for the post-production animation.
Right.
But when I'm not present and I'm trying something, I catch it. That's when I get embarrassed.
Let's get out of the head for a minute and get into real life. Okay. So we understand how you understood that you liked getting laughs. So where'd you start doing comedy? In Cleveland?
Cleveland, yeah.
At Hilarities?
The first stand-up set I did was at the Cleveland Improv, and I was doing improvisation theater as well.
Oh, you were part of a group.
Uh-huh. I was part of theirs. They weren't. I don't know if they would have thought that. I do remember feeling just like lot of groups. I felt like I was forcing my way in.
So wait, so they were a group and then they were improvising and you would just jump in?
They were a team and they held one.
Two?
What's that?
Two of them?
There was, I don't know, like eight.
Oh, big.
Eight people, one team.
Sure.
And they had practices every week.
Yeah.
So their performances, they had a performance every week and a practice every week. Yeah. The team did the performances. There were more people, and I was one of the one in the practice.
Yeah.
And I would just, you know, show up and do some improv comedy.
Yeah.
And.
But you liked that.
I loved it. Yeah. I did. That was what I was doing for the first 4 or 5 years before stand-up took priority.
And when did you start doing stand-up?
April... March 4th, 2007.
Like, when did you start wearing the t-shirt about being a paid regular?
Oh, I'm not past at the Comedy Store sweatshirt.
Yeah.
I made that over Thanksgiving.
Oh, recently?
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
I'm not past at the Comedy Store was a conversation that happened on one of the episodes, and then people would bring it up. Why isn't he passed or whatever? In nice ways. They were nice things, but it wasn't an identity of mine by any means.
Sort of a joke shirt.
Yeah, but then it was like, you know, everybody isn't passed somewhere. They have their hurdles or obstacles.
But here in this town, the weird sort of like being passed at the Comedy Store. It's like the Cellar. It's like getting passed at the Cellar in New York.
Yeah.
Like there's like, you know.
There's two types of comedians.
Yeah. Passed at the Cellar, not passed. Yeah. Passed at the Store, not passed.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, you're past?
Yeah,
do you want to come do my Do you want to come do my podcast? Hey, you should get Rick Glassman on. Is he past at the
Store? Is he?
I don't know. Why is he funny?
I don't know what his status at the Store is. I think he does bringer shows.
Uh-huh. Yeah, there's a stigma. There's a stigma to doing bringer shows, and then there's a stigma to not being past.
But what about the alt scene? You weren't part of the alt scene?
I don't know if I'm being hard on myself, but I don't know if I'm part of any scene. I just, you know, I got on a television show a few years ago and it was.
How did he find you?
Who's he?
Bill.
The Improv.
Bill Lawrence found you at the Improv.
Yeah.
You were doing stand-up.
I was doing a Will Smith impression.
And this was, like, for those people who don't know who I'm talking to, it's Rick Glassman. I'm resetting like we're on
Thank
radio.
You. Yeah.
Welcome back. Rick Glassman is my guest, and you might have known him. He was on the show Undateable, which was on for 3 seasons.
Mm-hmm.
3 seasons, then canceled for reasons that a lot of people don't understand.
Cut to a clip of us just having a meltdown on set. Just racist meltdown. Bill saw
Wait,
me on
a racist meltdown.
Yeah, I feel like if
oh, I see. Like, that's a joke. That didn't really happen.
No, like just to say why would right. no one
why
knows why I got canceled? Cut to just
well, it
oh,
got
Jesus.
Canceled for the reason everything gets canceled. Not enough people were watching it.
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah.
But it was you and D'Elia and Funches and
Brent
Moran.
Yeah.
Moran. Yeah.
Yeah. Bill saw me. I was doing some weird stuff.
Yeah.
And he said, "I like how comfortable you are in uncomfortable moments." And
that's sort of your place. That's your thing. That's your hook.
Yeah. Is that an anti-Semitic remark?
No, not at all. I have nothing to do with your nose. Okay. We had more to do with that's what you're known for. Hey, man, I just made everything uncomfortable, but I'm going to sit in it for a while and make you guys love me.
Yeah, you know, that's where the podcast has helped me is I never wanted to make people uncomfortable. That's just a symptom of the joke. You know,
is that true, though?
Yeah, 100%. I always want people to be in on it with me. I just can't wink to them and say, hey, because then it doesn't work anymore.
Yeah, but that goes back to this sort of idea that everybody sort of knows where you're at.
Yeah, that's why it's not a flawless art form. Mm. They don't know where I'm at. I have to find ways of telling them, of showing them without telling
them.
Dude,
we're gonna end up where, you know, you and I sort of first met. That's where we're gonna end up.
Okay.
With what we're talking about right now.
I don't know if it's the come down or just the conversation, but I don't know how I feel right now.
What's the matter?
I don't know. I can't tell if I'm insecure about talking too much or saying the right things.
Did the bottom just fall out on you?
It didn't fall out, but I'm realizing, oh, it's not it's not cement.
Really? No. Everything's going good. Don't. You know, Ron Perlman. I almost lost Ron Perlman on here.
He had a heart attack?
No, he just fell into an insecure hole for a minute, and it was touch and go.
I don't know if this is an insecure. I think this is just cost of doing business. It's an energy thing.
Yeah, I don't know. I'm not buying it.
Can I tell you where part of it comes from? I'm aware of it.
What?
You just exhaled the same way my doctor did before he told me he doesn't like when I come in, by the way. Let me tell you this quick story.
How often do you go in?
I ask a lot of questions.
Okay, yeah.
I would go to the doctor a lot.
Yeah.
I would get STD checks even if I hadn't had sex since the last time I got one because I was in the doctor's office.
I am a recovering hypochondriac. I understand your plight.
I was asking my I had shoulder surgery, and I asked my doctor a question about my shoulder. Mm-hmm. He's not my shoulder doctor, but he's a doctor, and I'm there, and I got some inflammation issues. I got a question, doc.
Sure.
And he goes, what you just did.
He went.
And I said, it seems like you don't really like when I come in here.
Yeah.
And he said, when I come to the door and I see your name is on the clipboard, I do take a breath. And I said, I spend no more than 10 minutes at a time with you. He goes, yeah, but there's too many questions.
Yeah.
A year later, I get this autism diagnosis. I go back to him, you know, I'm basically, you know, like twirling my watch. Yeah. Hello, doctor. And
guess what?
Guess what I found out? He apologized and he said, that makes so much sense.
Oh.
And since then, I don't see this doctor anymore. But I did for another year plus, and he was so nice to me. And he was talking to me about baseball. I don't watch baseball. I'm not interested in baseball.
Basketball's your thing, right?
Yeah, football? But I also, basketball only, but not so much to where I
your
need to
talk. Your mother's football, right?
My grandma.
Oh, that's your grandma.
Is football. My mom is Andy Griffith.
Okay.
But yeah, he was just so nice. And there is a perfect—
Matlock?
Of course.
Yeah, okay.
Of an example of expectation, where I'm the same guy asking the same questions, but now this guy thinks I'm, you know, whatever he thinks autism is.
Uh-huh.
So now he's like, hey, man, did you see the
right.
I couldn't even think of a baseball. The Dodgers?
Like he likes numbers. The autistic guy, he likes stats.
Yeah. Well, just take my blood and tell me what I have going on with my dick.
Wow. Never had any STDs, did you?
I've had, you know, little things here and there that, you know, nothing that a pill didn't take care of.
Oh, good.
Yeah.
Really?
Here's where we animate my dick from 2014, coughing, explaining this. We have to understand it was a different time.
Yeah, sure.
Yeah.
But you're still with the girl who lives in England?
Yeah.
Is she in
Betty.
England?
She's in Australia now. She's a dual citizen. Her family lives in Australia. And boy, her arm's tired after she traveled.
Sure, because she had to fly there.
Yeah. Back to the guy who's like, no, it's working its way back.
It's called back. I get it, man. These guys are pros. When did you move here, though?
2008.
So you came out here to do comedy, kind
of. Came out here to act. I didn't know if it was comedy, but I had.
Had you done any acting training other than the improv
group? Yeah, I did theater in college.
You did?
Marketing and theater.
Yeah. So it's working out for you.
I'm on Mark Maron's What the Fuck podcast talking about acting.
You did, and you did a TV show.
And I got a show coming out later this year, too.
Now you're selling yourself with dicks and goblins.
Did you hear that I got a show coming out this year?
I'm just going to get to it. I'm a pro. So what's this show you have coming out?
Writing down, ask about the show. It's a Jason Kadam show he did Parenthood and Friday Night Lights.
Oh.
He's brilliant.
Yeah.
And there's an Israeli show called On the Spectrum.
Yeah.
And they're remaking it for Amazon. I don't know if it's going to be called On
What's
the Spectrum.
What's that about?
It's about a couple of football players who just fuck girls all day, every day.
Weird name for a show about that.
It's three autistic roommates who are finding ways of learning how to live life independently with jobs.
Don't they have a reality dating show for autistic?
Oh, man, yeah. It's an Australian show called I don't remember. Something Spectrum, I think.
And why'd you go, oh, man?
Because it's a great show, and I don't remember the name of it.
Oh, you like the show?
I loved it.
Why don't you get someone to get you the rights, and you can host the American version?
I don't want to host it. Mm. Okay?
Yeah.
Can we move past the hosting?
I'm just pitching, man. Ideas, man. I'm worried about your career.
Are you?
No. So what's the... What's this Spectrum show? How many did you already shoot it?
We filmed the pilot, and we start filming the series in March.
That's great. So you're going to be on an Amazon show.
Yeah.
Called On the Spectrum.
They might change the name. So.
To what?
Footballing Chicks.
But who's the other actors?
Joe Montana plays my dad.
I like that guy.
Sosie Bacon plays my caregiver. Mm. And there's a few people that... The other two autistic actors are all three of us are somewhere on the spectrum.
Yeah.
And I don't really know them from before. Uh-huh. I don't know what type of experiences they have.
But I mean, what was the experience being with them, the three of you?
I talked to Jason when we were filming during one of the scenes about the same insecurity I told you about. What are you looking at?
I get hung up on levels. No, I get obsessed with, like, I don't want it to pop too much. I'm fine. It's just a habit. Sorry. I'm with you.
I get distracted when someone looks
away. You talk to
Jason. I talk to Jason because I'm playing a character, but I was also cast because of my life experiences.
Yeah.
And how much do I bring who I am to this character versus how much am I taking on the character that they've written for me? And there's a line between the two where I feel I'm making assumptions that make me feel like, am I being a spokesperson for this thing? Am I creating this character that is inauthentic? And that's what acting is, and you have to do the research for it.
Mm.
But there's something because this is still a relatively new diagnosis for me, where there is an insecurity and an identity to it, where I feel like I have to really understand it before I could. Because there's a really big responsibility. This show is beautiful. It's beautiful. It's Jason Kadams. It's one of the ones that you can probably, you know, cry at every episode at some point. And it's also, you know, I don't take on this responsibility, but the show has a responsibility of educating what this is and can be, and some of the obstacles.
Destigmatizing.
Yes. And through that show, I then become.
I just did a classic Larry King.
What, by packaging something?
The one word. Destigmatizing.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
And so I have this responsibility to be part of something, and I don't want to lie, but also I'm playing a character.
Right.
It gets tough.
Well, maybe you should not think about it so much.
Yeah, there's a line between not thinking about versus not prepping and putting in the work, right?
I guess, but if you're doing a good job, does he think you're doing a good job?
Who's to say? Until he laughs, I don't know how he feels, but he said I am. Well, I think I connect with the character very strongly, so I think I am.
Well, I mean, how much of what you do is just weird kind of being hard on yourself, you know, and, you know, part of the issue?
I feel like your cadence forced the second part. I don't know. I mean, what's the difference?
Well, you can make choices around being hard on yourself.
Maybe I'll get better at it, but I'm pretty comfortable knowing that it's not as I am hard on myself sometimes, but I have accepted that this is going to sound so ridiculous, and I don't mean this as a joke.
I'm excited.
I have realized that I'm not perfect.
Wait, what?
I realized that people aren't perfect.
Wait.
It took me a while.
Come on.
Could you connect with me for a second and try to understand what I mean by that? Because when you look at people, it's easier to accept other people's flaws because you've accepted them, as opposed to your own, where you're mad that you have them. So when you've accepted somebody else's flaws, it doesn't take away from their perfection.
Yeah,
LeBron misses a shot, it doesn't mean he's not perfect.
Oh, I see what
you're saying. Part of what it is.
Yeah, because I don't accept anyone's flaws. I'm always judging, and I, like, a lot of times I'm just sort of like, that's sad.
Yeah.
And I hope that person's okay.
And that's why people are scared to have you over on their podcast for the first time, but then you prove them wrong.
Yeah, but it's like, it's just natural, and then you just get to know the person as they are. They're not perfect, but they are who they are.
Yeah.
What does perfect mean? I just know I could be 3 pounds lighter.
I think the closest to perfect means acceptance of who you are and a fair amount of awareness to recognize where you can change and if you can.
Right. And also knowing your limitations.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So if I'm cast in a role where like this one, where I feel it's built for me to shine.
Yeah.
My limitations are going to be a lot greater than if I'm on Undateable, where that's not necessarily my wheelhouse, that character.
Because it's a caricature.
It's a caricature.
It's limited.
It's very limited, both right. In attempts of jokes, the type of joke, and
it's just the role. You're a joke machine.
Yeah, and it was in a style that at the time, though I'm still not built for it, I didn't understand it.
Yeah.
I felt like I was used to, I'm used to driving to the hole, and then I got a job where I'm supposed to take screens. And that's an important job, but I wanted to do other things.
Yeah. And this has more range to it.
This
has
more,
and it actually embraces your nature.
Yeah, and I mean, I've literally been spending 4 years researching it and understanding it, and seeing these. I now have autistic friends, and I know autistic people, but I don't have autistic friends before this show.
That you know of.
That I know of, yeah. That talk about their experiences through the lens of autism and their obstacles and strengths. And now I'm literally in a room with these people for hours talking about it and asking questions, and they're asking questions. I love questions. And finding patterns between our personalities and finding things that I realize, is this a Rick thing or is this an autism thing? Are those different?
Oh,
does that matter?
That's great.
Is this a neurotypical thing? Is this a Jewish thing?
Yeah.
And it's just open... And
you're hoping that eventually you'll come out the other side of it going, I'm fully integrated.
What I want to come out the other side is believing something that is, whether it's real or not, which is I'm special. Back to that thing again. Like a lot of the not being included and the negative experiences I had in my life, the special schools and such.
Didn't that make you feel special?
No, it made me feel less than
different.
Which you say you're
in a bad way.
Yes,
got it.
Where your fear and where you work to avoid is embarrassment.
Mm.
Mine is not being good enough. I mean, it's the same thing, but just a different place in our minds.
I have that too. That's part of it.
This, I'm sorry.
It's okay.
You're doing great.
Thanks.
This diagnosis offered me a perception of all of those things were supposed to be. And it's not that I'm not good enough. It's that I have obstacles. But, you know, I could do a lot of things great, too.
Mm.
And that's where that perfect thing comes from, where all those shots I missed, I realized, oh, you're, you know, maybe you should be playing a different sport or
sure.
It's okay to miss or whatever it might be.
Yeah.
So that's special, that feeling, everybody
needs to...
Or
make light of it.
Literally, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, I know enough about myself at this age to know that when I do this sort of self-hatred or expectations or perfectionist thing, that it's ridiculous. But there's something comforting about it because I've been doing it so fucking long.
Because you procured a shtick. Like,
it's even older than that. It's really like, you know, kind of like home base.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like joy is weird to me because I don't know how to experience it. So when I do experience it, I'm like, this is weird and terrible. And, you know, like even when I look good or I'm at a good weight or I'm healthy, I'm sort of like, I'm not good enough. Yeah, you know, like, but I know it's bullshit and it doesn't matter. Who am I judging? I'm not out in the world right now. I'm not even doing television. And I'm fucking beating myself up over 4 pounds.
You said something to me. I texted you last week about coming back on my podcast to talk about embarrassment and how to get past certain feelings in a moment. And you said something to me that I loved. I was asking what I wanted to listen to some of your podcasts where you felt, coincidentally, as the Larry King one posted, where you felt embarrassed, uncomfortable, not in the pocket,
and
tools to avoid and acknowledge. And amongst some other texts, you said, there's been many moments, but who cares? They're real and they're human and we all have them. And though I knew that already, it was articulated in a way, packaged, that was like, that's great. You miss shots.
Sure. We had like 9 during this conversation.
Did we?
No, you brought attention to all of them.
Oh, fuck.
Yeah.
And now 10.
Yeah. Exactly.
I also got to let you know, I feel great again with you. It's cool to be here. It's cool to be doing your podcast.
I knew it would come around.
And it did.
I had complete confidence that we were going to pull you out of it, whatever the fuck happened to. But that was like, when I first met you, this was my experience. I know we've talked about it before. I didn't really know you. I knew you were on the show. I had no idea that you were on the spectrum. But you didn't know you were on the spectrum when you did Undateable.
Yeah, I did. No. I did when I did stand-up, but I wasn't talking about it.
Right. But like what I did is I walked up to the belly room. Cause sometimes I go up there in between my spots in the real rooms as a past person.
Were you feeling insecure there or were you bullying me?
No. No, I'm just saying I went up to the belly room. I'm saying
which
that
I
this
do
is,
sometimes.
Which I do sometimes in between sets because I'm passed at the Comedy Store and I can do sets in the real rooms.
But you pass at the Cellar too?
I pass at the Cellar. It took me 8 years though. It took me a long time to pass
at
the Cellar.
Yeah, well, I'm 12 and I used to answer phones there.
At the Cellar?
At the store.
You used to answer phones there and you didn't get the... I answered phones there.
Yeah. I was once Tommy got the boot.
Oh, it was harder. You were on the Tommy trajectory?
I was on the Tommy trajectory.
Anyway, so I go up to the belly room. I'm just being a dick. And I see you and I kind of know you. I hadn't seen your stand-up that I remembered. And there you were with a bag. And in my mind, I'm like, he's a bag guy. He's got a bag. I know there's an act in that bag. Uh-huh. And I prejudged. And then you went up with your
bag.
Well,
judge is a prejudge. You judged.
So prejudge isn't a word?
It's assumed. It's.
What's the difference between prejudged and judged?
I feel like a prejudge is like putting a one in front of the X. It works, but... I mean, you can make a calculated judgment after you met me to assume you know more, but it's still a judgment.
Right. Okay, fine. So I judged based on the bag that you were going to take things out of the bag for your stand-up routine.
You did. That's more of a deduction.
Fine. But no, because I don't have great feelings about bags.
Yeah.
And stand-up.
Like my ex-wife.
Yeah. Yeah. Boom. You have an ex-wife?
Oh, who doesn't? But let's carry on.
Do you?
Technically, no, but, you know, it's a space holder.
Okay, fine. You were never married?
No.
So it was a joke?
Yeah, it was an arms-tired level joke.
I got it. I figured.
Edit this part out. Go on. Just put in a Marshall Rudd commercial the last 4 minutes.
But then you go up with your bag and you start doing the bag bit. You know, like here's a thing and here's another thing. I'm putting a hat on. Now remember, then there's a puppet that you explained to me was from the Undateable show that you kept and you used in your act. But to me... My problem was, is like all these guys who do the bag routine, and there's not a lot of them, but there have been.
It's a tough act.
Right. But there have been, you know, any generation has got the guy who's got the bag.
And any generation has the guy who sits down and he's upset and angry.
About the bag.
About somebody that they prejudged.
Right.
Yeah.
About everything.
Yeah.
It's much more common to have the guy who sits down and he's angry than it is the bag guy. Which my point is that because bag guys think they're special. But my point in
and
judging
angry guys are upset that they're not.
Maybe. No, I don't know if that's true. I think angry guys think they have something to say.
Okay.
Yeah. But you know, the crank is, you know, I was never really, some guys are natural cranks and they're funny.
You're not a natural crank?
It took me a long time. I was actually angry, which is less entertaining.
Okay.
But it's just speaking to your desire to be seen as special. And I think that bad guys, you know, going back to Kaufman or anybody, even Lenny Schultz, but there's a different type of bad guy. You're doing a conceptual bit. There's an intelligence to it. You're not just a prop act.
Thank you.
Yeah.
In fact, I avoided props for a long time out of insecurity that...
You would be judged by me?
But that I wouldn't be able to translate the irony.
Mm. Weren't doing props for real.
Listen, if you do props for real and you're good at it, more power to you. That's not what my craft is, so I would be faking it.
Right.
But there are so many funny things you could do with props because of the built-in expectations to props, the feeling you had.
Right.
And I didn't want to do it because then you got to travel with them and you become a prop guy and blah. But then I realized, what do I care if it gets a laugh? Mm. But anyway, go on.
No, but then you went up and you did it. And, I think I went on and mocked you. Mm-hmm. I'm sure your memory of this is crystal clear.
My memory of it is, go on.
And then, but later, like, I did find there was something I liked about you because you were
then,
earnest.
You liked about me?
Yeah, why
would that?
Yeah, but didn't I apologize to you?
The next day, and I still don't, even after our podcast, I still don't know how you got my number or people make fun of me all the time. I have Asperger's. No, I'm just kidding about the making fun because of that.
Yeah.
Nobody has texted me and apologized the next day. And it's almost as if, you know, it was Stockholm Syndrome. It's not that, but it's almost as if like you being mean and then apologizing after made you more likable than had you not done anything to begin with.
Hmm.
There's also something to the fact that when you were mean to me, I crushed that set. I don't know if you remember, and I'm not I don't crush that often. That just
right.
If I'm doing 8 minutes or less, I could do really well.
Yeah.
and I had a great set. So I didn't feel that your judgments or prejudgments and your anger was it didn't
based on you bombing.
Yeah, or me as bomb. Or more specifically based on me as a performer.
Sure. It was me being an insecure dick trying to follow a mess and make the, you know, to take a shot at you on the way out so I could get my first laugh.
The first three,
and I'm not sure it worked.
You did probably 5-7 minutes on me in a less than 15-minute set. And the first 3 minutes, not only was I flattered, it was funny.
Yeah.
It was like, because I just did well.
Yeah.
Now he's calling to attention the oddities, so you could then set the stage for your different thing. You're basically, it's just a tool of changing expectation again. I'm not going to come up here and pull my dick out and have a puppet. I'm going to sit on a chair and complain.
Did you pull your dick out?
No.
Did I complain? I guess I complained. Right. Yeah, go ahead.
Here's Mark Maron. He's a well-established, he's passed at the Comedy Store and the Cellar. He's talking about me. This is great. Minute four, it's like, all right, Mark, let's do your stuff, you know? Yeah. And then minute seven, it's like, all right, I don't know if he's riding the wave, but you were being a little...
mean?
Yeah, you were being mean. My feelings weren't hurt, but I didn't understand what you were doing.
Yeah.
And I didn't go home sad. I didn't think much of it.
I think it became a broader conversation about guys who do that.
And that I think that also unlocked something for you, which was you were making comedy associations and kind of like what you said here. There's always, you said, I've been doing this for however long,
a million years,
and you said there's always one of that,
right?
And that made me laugh because that's funny. And also, oh, there's only one of that.
Exactly. You know, well, that's the point. That's what got us here, was the specialness.
But then you texted me, you apologized, you used too many big words. And I thought that was really...
You don't have that anymore in your phone?
They delete after a year. But I have the screen grab somewhere.
That's okay.
And it's on my podcast, which if I'm plugging something else, watch our podcast.
Sure.
I do get messages about it often. I tag you sometimes.
Oh,
how much people really like that one.
Yeah,
and they
get
to see you in a way that... seeing you silly like that.
Yeah. Right. Well, I felt bad because, like, you know, there's something about not carrying that stuff with me. You know, I'm trying to figure out, like, why, you know, like, I think I knew I went too far in a way. Not that you would have mattered to you necessarily, but I just felt like it was just one of those things where I was just mean. I was just being like a bully or something.
Yeah, it was, to your credit, it was obviously an act. Like, you were trying to be funny.
Yeah.
And you were for most of it.
Yeah.
You were funny enough for all of it.
Right.
But yeah, it did get to a point to where it's like the intention behind it was, as you said, feeling insecure about, you know, whatever it might have been for you.
Right.
But had we ran into each other a month later and had a conversation in the hallway, there would have been nothing that you did would have made me be like squinting my eyes at you. You know, it's just, it happens all the time.
But you would have, it would have sort of implanted even deeper the idea that, like, oh yeah, Mark's a cranky fuck, and, you know, he's going to come to my house, he's going to be cranky, and it's going
to
be
I wouldn't have asked you to come on had you not sent me the message.
Right.
I wouldn't have felt that there was any connection between us. Not that there couldn't be, but that there wasn't one.
That's true. Yeah.
So, you know, I'd just be reaching out because you have a successful podcast, and will you help me bring numbers in, or whatever the superficial reason would be.
That's the only reason I'm having you on.
Trying to get that YouTube audience.
Yeah.
But like I said, people shit on me all the time. My friend, it's part of, you know, It's part of what we do. And you have to acknowledge the room. And you didn't do anything. I didn't feel like you crossed a line. You just stood on it a little longer than you needed to.
that's a performance note.
That's just a critique of, like, when in doubt, just cap it at 180 seconds.
Yeah.
But that message to me was like, because also you didn't have my number. It wasn't just a fuck, I got a message from you. You had to ask somebody.
Yeah.
Like you, and it was the next day. So you thought about it. And I just thought that was just forget you being mean or not mean or funny enough, whatever it might be.
I think it was me waking up and thinking, like, you know, I think you're too old to be threatened by a puppet.
Well, me being threatened by a puppet is the only reason I use one. Let me ask you a question. Now that our friendship is getting to the point to my doctor. Listen, I'm not a shoulder doctor, Rick.
Yeah.
I have autism, Mark.
Oh my God. Do you like sports?
Go ahead. Yeah.
Yeah.
How do we piggyback your guests to then, on their way home, come over to do mine.
Oh, boy. Well, I mean, no one's coming over anymore.
Well, when the world changes.
Yeah, comics for some reason. The only people that come over are comics of your generation.
Is that because you feel comfortable with them or they feel comfortable with you?
No, it's just they're willing to do it.
Right.
You know, I don't know. Like, I've gotten to the point, like, if you have it, I probably got it. If I got it, you probably have it. But I feel we both safe enough. But I was getting tested, like, every fucking 2 weeks for a while.
Yeah. I definitely make assumptions based on people's, the projection I have of their lifestyle.
Yeah.
Whether or not I'm comfortable with that thing.
Yeah, I'm nervous all the time. Anyways. That's
why I do mine on the balcony. I have my guests on the balcony.
I know. I open
times.
The windows and we're safe. We're separated and there's the glass here. But you know, who the fuck knows? It'll be all right.
Okay.
Oh, yes. So, sure. I will let people know that you do a podcast and it's on a balcony. Why don't I just tell them to watch, you know, this show?
Yeah, but I'm not talking about your audience. I'm talking about your guests.
No, I know.
Bring it up for the next... What if you did a segment for the next, I don't know, for the rest of the year?
Yeah.
Where you say...
That's a long time.
You
January.
Then until the end of 2022, whenever you want. And you say something where it's
why don't you print up some cards for me and I can just hand them to the... people.
Sure.
Like the Rick Glassman, take your shoes off.
Yeah.
And then make a little picture of you and a goblin cock in the balcony.
Uh-huh.
And say, like, you know, if you want to talk to this guy,
yeah,
you think that'll do it?
No. I think it's a horrible sell. And also, I only had 45 seconds to do it before it becomes gratuitous. So yeah. I'm going to just text you after and tell you how to get me Obama.
Good talking to you, buddy.
Thanks. You too, man.
Rick Glassman, that was a lot of self-awareness around autism. It turned out to be an educational, powerful talk, empowering and eye-opening, both to those of us who don't have autism and people who have autism. It's sort of an inspirational story, the Rick Glassman story, which I'm writing right now. All right, you guys, look, maybe it was a weird one. Maybe it was. Maybe I'm weird today. But it's better than being sad, isn't it? Weird is better than sad. Now let's play some sad music. Let's go down to the continent. Okay? God, when can we run again? I mean away. Fonda, monkey, flying, cat angels everywhere.
Moin, wir sind die Footballerei. Ich bin Kutsche.
Ich bin Flo.
Und ich bin Daniel.
Wir sind aber noch viele mehr. In der Footballerei gibt es American Football Freischnauze, überwiegend die NFL, in ganz vielen verschiedenen Formaten. Da ist für alle was dabei.
Das Frühstücksei zum Beispiel gibt es jeden Montag ab 5 Uhr als Podcast. In der Saison natürlich mit den ersten Reaktionen auf die Spiele des Wochenendes und in der Offseason versorgen wir dich hier mit allen frischen News aus dem NFL-Kosmos.
Dazu gibt es die bunte Welt der NFL in Kutsches Zirkus, hochspannende Kriminalfälle bei Hall of Crime und das Thema der Woche während der Saison in der Footballerei. Show.
Also, wenn dich American Football fasziniert, wirst du die große Auswahl in der Footballerei lieben. Wir freuen uns auf dich.